Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown.
Far from a utopia, how Europe is failing and how Britain could do better is the new book by Ross Clark. Perhaps not looking at Europe, the European Union with rose-coloured spectacles and the fact that maybe Britain isn't doing as badly as the naysayers think. Delighted to say that joining us live on the line is the author of Far From Utopia, and I believe that's the way we're pronouncing it, is Ross Clark. Good morning to you, Ross.
Good morning, Jazz.
Good to have you with us. I'm sitting here in that there Europe, in southern Spain, and obviously it's been a very interesting couple of years for the Europeans amongst us, and there is a lot of feeling that, you know, Britain is now the sick man of Europe and is failing badly and is being cast away. It's floating off into the middle of the Atlantic, jettisoned by cut away from Europe, and also seemingly jettisoned by the US. Explain a little bit about the reasoning behind your book.
Yes, well, that's the narrative that a lot of Remooners, as we call them in the UK, like to establish, that, successful and dynamic and nice, liberal, cuddly EU is sailing off into the sunset without us. But to sustain that narrative, it relies on us not looking too hard at what's going on across the channel in continental Europe, because we've got Germany just about to enter its third year of recession. France is as up to its eyeballs in debt as Britain is, and the global bond investors aren't very impressed with that either. Spain, Italy, been doing much better in the past year or so, but the economies are flatlined all this century, really. But I mean, the big story behind it all, it's not sort of so much Europe versus the UK, it's the fact that Britain and the EU are both sort of locked in the same trajectory of low growth. And if you compare growth over the EU over the past 25 years with America, well, America's been growing at roughly twice the rate of Europe. And, without economic growth, of course, we cannot then subsidise, fund the public services. And, public services are one of the great sort of arguments of pro-Europeans, the claim to, European civilization to be superior to that of the US. But, if we're going to grow at half the rate of the US, we're going to suffer from that.
I suppose you could argue that one of the problems is the fact that obviously the US is a single entity, whilst the European Union is an expanding and retracting body of nation states.
Well, there are big divergence between economies in the US, between states, as there are between European countries. Yes, of course, some European countries are doing better than others, but the overall picture is one of a sclerotic economy, and there are good reasons for this, because what I'd say in the book, one of the main reasons why Europe is sort of falling behind is it has this heritage approach to industry. It sees a present industry, says that's got to be preserved, the jobs have got to be preserved, rather than embracing new technology, embracing new things, and allowing the sort of constant invention, reinvention of the economy, which the Americans are very, very good at, and which is, ultimately the story why they grow faster than we do.
What was the starting point of this one? What was the spark that made you think, right, I need to put this down on paper, I need to put pen to paper or finger to keyboard, because we need to... Is it a question, Ross, that perhaps also you say far from utopia. Are we seduced by ideals? So those who were pro-Brexit have been, everybody remembers, the Sunny Up Plan's comments, but also that whole thing of, I grew up with Jacques Delors and kids ask your parents, but, that whole thing about we were all going to be one big European happy family. Have we been seduced by these ideas, and yet the reality is somewhat different?
Yeah, well, indeed. I don't disagree with some of the benefits of being in the EU. I think it's regret regrettable in many ways that sort of particularly young people have lost the ability to go and live and work in any other EU country. I didn't actually want to lose that sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, I look across at the sort of ideals of EU claims to be this of great, you know, the single market and the free trade organization, but actually it erects all these barriers between external barriers between the EU and the rest of the world, both in tariffs and that great practice of EU, the non-tariff barriers, things like sort of bans on GM food, chlorinated chicken, which have no basis in scientific basis, but are rather sort of designed to protect European consumers. But there's a fascinating poll, which I quote in the book, which simply asks people in various countries, you know, are you happy to buy food and eat food which comes from another country? And actually, Britain came up very high on that. You know, in Britain, we're very happy to eat food from other countries. In Italy, I think, came absolute bottom. You know, Italians do not want to eat tomatoes from grown in any other country from Italy, other than Italy. And you think, well, you know, you've got constructed this single market, but there's a lot of Europeans evidently don't really believe in it. And we had, you know, a year ago, we had the French farmers burning produce that they thought was threatening their own livelihoods coming from Spain. And, you know, there's a great belief in the single market.
But,
there,
we must keep our European traditions going, Ross. And French farmers burning stuff is, you know, it's like having the Krampus celebrations in Austria and Germany during, you know, during the winter months. It's something that they do, you know, every year.
Well, I think if you were an exporter, if you were a Spanish farmer sending your tomatoes to France, you wouldn't see it that way. And, you know, it's absolutely disgraceful behaviour. I know the French have a long tradition of barricades and taking to the streets when, you know, anything they don't like. But, no, it's not in the spirit of the single market. It's not in the spirit of European unity to attack goods being imported into your country. And I'd say, you know, in Britain, we may have sort of drifted away out of the EU, but even so, I think in some ways we are more open to, you know, foreign products and also to foreign travellers the many other countries that you don't see. I mean, I keep seeing these people carrying these signs in Spain saying tourist go home, all this anti-tourism move among some Spanish communities. And, you know, I don't see that in Britain. There's nobody telling tourists to go home in Britain. I think, you know, we're very open to people coming here.
Yeah, that's the whole thing with an infrastructure problem in Spain, and the fact that developers have gone crazy, and therefore it's hasn't allowed. They haven't put in a social housing infrastructure, which because they've gone for profit and greed over actually what the people need, and that is why you're seeing that. But again, a lot of it has been inflated by quote unquote the media, of who we both work for. And if you were to believe what you're seeing in the media as well, you would think that Britain is xenophobic, bordering on racist. Of course, the riots after the Stockport murders, and we're getting the thing today, the judgment today about that, seem to say that anyway, you know, that basically large swathes of the UK were inherently racist, if nothing else. What you don't believe that either, Ross?
Well, I quote a number of sort of studies which have attempted to compare attitudes between countries, and virtually every one of them puts Britain as one of the least racist and xenophobic countries in the world. And in the European context, I think it's Britain and Portugal come out best. Look at, you know, if you want nasty far-right parties, you won't find them in Britain. We don't have a functioning far-right party of any significance in Britain at the moment. But, you know, every other country seems to have these sort of, you know, parties with very disturbing attitudes towards migrants and so on. And, you know, illegal migration has to be contained, but it has to be contained in a civilized way. And when you hear some of what has been said by German politicians particularly, and German politicians which are very close to being in power, you know, those are sentiments that would not be acceptable in Britain, but which are said openly by mainstream politicians, Germany, Holland, Belgium, and so on. You know, the politics surrounding migration is far more rancid in many European countries than it is in Britain. So I just do not buy the argument that we are a sort of racist, xenophobic country which stands out from the rest of Europe.
So where does Britain go from here then? Well, you know, does it still continue to have ties with the EU? What's your vision, if you like? What do you think should be happening in regards to the UK and its relationship with the EU? And should it be looking west towards America and rebuilding that special relationship?
Well, I want Britain to trade with countries all around the world, and we are. The US, by the way, is our single biggest trading partner and was during our latter years in the EU. Since leaving the EU, we've managed to cut trade deals with Australia, and we joined the Pacific, Trans-Pacific Partnership, which might seem a bit odd given our geography, but given that a growing amount of our trade is in services rather than goods, you know, physical location doesn't actually matter. We should, can and should trade with everyone. But when it comes to developing an economic model, I don't want us to look to the EU for that, because I think the EU model, social democratic model, high regulation, relatively high tax, that's failing. You know, I want us to look beyond Europe to the US, which I said is growing at twice the speed of Europe. Places like Singapore, Korea. I mean, you know, take Singapore, which travelled from being a third world country to being one of the richest nations on earth within the space of two generations. And, you know, I think we should be studying how countries like that have managed to achieve sort of far higher rates of growth than has Europe.
What are you hoping that people will take from your book, Far From Utopia?
Well, I hope it will, you know, introduce a level of balance to the debate, and that, you know, particularly in Britain, we have the Ramoners, as we call them, who just seem to think that European civilization is the sort of, you know, be all and end all, the epitome of civilization in the world, and that we, you know, we've got to rejoin and so on. And, you know, what I hope the book will achieve is to persuade people, no, to look a bit abroad and say Brexit is done. We, of course, we want and we need good relations with Europe, but, you know, we need to look to the wider world for inspiration of how we get out of our sort of slough of low growth and failing public services.
The book is called Far From Utopia. It's by Ross Clark. Ross, if people want to find you online, you're active on the socials. Is there a website? Where can people in the nicest possible way engage in conversation or just see what you're up to?
Well, I have a Twitter feed, Ross Journo Clark, no E on Clark, or, the place where my work is most often found is in the Spectator website, which is www.spectator.co.uk. You'll find offerings from me several times a week on that site.
And you'll be also able to order the book via our own virtual bookstore. The book is called Far From Utopia. It's by Ross Clark. Ross, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.